Hey, everybody, and welcome to a new episode of Frank About Health. Today's date is March 5th, 2026, episode 172. And that being said, I'm proud of this particular episode because it reaches a milestone in everything that I've been trying to do on the show, especially since last October when I started my Voices of Disruption campaign. This is the third in a mini-series that myself, Phyllis Quinlan, and our special guest, Lynn Rapp-Silber, have created about the nurse practitioner profession. Now, if everybody caught on to last week's show towards the end of it, I was enraged at understanding how all the undercutting and underfunding of a very important profession, speaking as a personal caregiver, as well as speaking as any patient would when they need the kind of support that nurses and nurse practitioners are well known for decades long, probably even as much as 40 or 50 years, as we've discussed on our last two episodes in this series, is being undervalued, undercut, underfunded. It's coming to the state level. And there was a call to action that we spoke of. And I gather we will hear on today's episode any kind of information that may have come from it. But I do understand there's a waiting game at this point also in the whole process. But at least we're joining in the conversation to help continue the advocacy for a very important profession. Now, that being said, the only disclaimer I'm going to issue is that if you don't agree with nurses, then do not watch the show, because this is important information that only you can choose to take or not take. It's as simple as that. I'm sick of being, you know, Phyllis, I'm sick of being defensive about being light about hard truths that at this point we have no choice but to expose. So I'm really glad that in this special episode 172, we are going to get to the nitty gritty. All three of us, especially you, Lynn, when you have a presentation you want to show us. So that being said, Phyllis, since you're so eloquent, especially in the field of nursing, I'm handing my hat to you right now to take over.
Well, I don't know how to follow that up, my friend, other than to say there's a t-shirt in there somewhere. Because I would love to be able to, you know, it's a few doctors in my past career and in my current career, I'd like to be able to say, listen to this, or here's what I think about that. If you're not going to listen to the nurses, tune off, right?
Yes.
So, Lynn, welcome back. Frank and I are just thrilled. We could not be more thrilled and more proud to offer you a forum to talk about the absolute vital specialty, you know, of the licensed nurse practitioner role. And I can't believe this is, you know, session three. You know, we did a brief overview of nursing in general, and how the education process has taken us from indentured servitude at the hospital level to now where 7 to 8% of us are prepared at the doctorate level. And we did that in 60 years. I don't think other than Silicon Valley and the dot-com, you know, IT industry. I don't think any real profession has evolved at that speed with that kind of growth and vision and competency. So we talked a lot in episode one. We talked a lot in episode two. And you were kind enough to do something that I asked you to do, which to put together a PowerPoint presentation, because as you know, and I know, because we both are educators, that, you know, a picture is worth 1,000 words here. And just to give, you know, Frank's viewers just a little bit more to anchor them into the specialty of advanced care nursing. Mm-hmm. So I am going to ask you to, first of all, do you want to set up your PowerPoint in any way before you share your screen?
Well, first of all, I think we want to just bring people up to speed about our call to action about the Department of Education. We had over 300,000 responses and comments to the Department of Education's concern about the professional degree of nursing and not being able to secure professional loans because it wasn't classified that way. So I'm just really excited for all of my colleagues who, and thank you to all of those who submitted comments regarding this. It really helped get our voice out there and get us recognized. You know, where this is going to go, I have no idea. I know that a lot of states are preparing for it at their level in case funding is cut. I'm in Connecticut, and I'd be happy to share what we've been talking about in Connecticut with other states if that's something they're interested in hearing about. But I wanted to make sure I got that up to date. But I
Yes.
did put together a PowerPoint presentation, and I'm hoping that, let me just see about sharing my screen and getting it up here.
Okay.
Right.
All right. So I am going to let you take it away.
All right. There we go. I don't like when it always ends up covering all my screen, but
There
I
you
think what
go.
we really needed to kind of bring full circle around is that why MPs and why now? You know, what is driving all of this change in healthcare, and why nurse practitioners are just really we're hardwired and we're a ready workforce able to care for people in our country now. And now more than ever, people need access to healthcare. And it's been so challenging right now with the ACA subsidies going away and more cuts to Medicaid programs, and who knows what's going to be down the horizon. So I think the consumer really needs to be able to understand how MPs are trying to help in those areas to make care accessible and available. And I think one of the big things is because nurse practitioners meet people where they are. So we will partner with the patient. We will do a good assessment of them in history and figure out what makes them tick and what are some of the things and challenges that they might have in their healthcare journey that we might be able to help them solve. And we're also going to where the patients are. So it's not only meeting them where they are, it's going to where they are. So we'll be going to patients' homes or schools or daycares. And to try to provide care in those settings, we're going to employers. We're still in the hospital as well, but the branches outside of the hospital walls are growing exponentially as we speak. And the goal is to really put that patient first. And it's a different way of looking at healthcare because we've been so focused on illness and treating the disease that the patient might have. And really, now to make healthcare beneficial, it really needs to focus on putting the patient's needs first. Like where is that patient in their care journey, and how can we get them to their optimum level of wellness?
Yep.
Terrific. Okay. I think it's so very important to give you this time to be able to speak about this in the manner that you're doing, because as you know, in the political climate that we are currently trying to navigate, so many people are losing their access to healthcare. And if the goal is to make healthcare more affordable, and somewhere in there, more accessible. I do see that the role of the nurse practitioner will be increased exponentially because, as you say, they're not only meeting the people where they are, they're going to where the people are. And I have grave concerns that, we're going to take a leap. A 20-year leap backwards, where everybody's going to be using emergency departments as primary care. And that was one of the big things that I knew that nurse practitioners were doing was to reintroduce people to primary care and let the emergency department be just for that emergencies. So.
Exactly. And we're a growing workforce. Our numbers are growing exponentially, and we're at the ready to provide some of that workforce gaps in care and providing the care where, you know, currently it's limited. And frankly, we were heroes during COVID, and we had all of our barriers reduced at that time. And I don't understand what the purpose was of putting the genie back in the bottle and going backwards and reinstituting barriers. And we'll talk a little bit about some of those. But we can improve access to care because we can meet patients where they are. And a lot of it is really surrounding the social determinants of health. And this is a big area that healthcare is supposed to be focusing on right now. And it's really, we're trying to meet those needs. And until you're embedded in the community, you really don't know what the community needs. And that's where the nurse practitioners shine, because when they open practices in their communities, they do create small businesses. They're employing people within the community. They're keeping the employees of manufacturing and other areas, businesses, well and healthy. And they're creating an economic boon to the communities where they serve. So there's really no downside when you're
Right.
thinking about nurse practitioners and what they can do for communities, not only from just the patient standpoint, but an economic standpoint
Yeah,
as
yeah.
well.
I don't want to jump the line on your PowerPoint, but I'm hoping at some point you're going to discuss the scope of practice authority. Would you want me to hold my question until a little bit later, or should I ask that now?
Well, let me go to the next slide.
Okay.
And I just want to give the viewers kind of an overview. This is a really great infographic that the American Association of Nurse Practitioners put together. And I think this really gives a great snapshot of what's happening in the nurse practitioner field right now. We are the fastest growing, like I said, at 461,000. And you can see over, the past decade or so, our numbers have gone up a lot. So we are definitely a workforce that is expanding. So that can only mean that we'll be providing more access to care. And 80% of the patients we see are Medicaid, 74% are Medicare. And we provide 1 billion annual visits. But when I talk about incident to billing, that number is probably three times that of what the nurse practitioners are actually seeing. And again, we're all 50 states are really trying to look at expanding scope of practice. And right now, this is what the map looks like. So as you can see, there's green, yellow, and red. Green are full practice authority states where nurse practitioners can practice basically without a lot of restrictions. There are some of the states that are in green do have a transition to practice for a certain period of time. The yellow is restricted practice. So this is a collaborative agreement that is required probably with a physician to provide services in that area. We also will have maybe there is a protocol issue that has to be done. The red states are restricted states where there's actually physician oversight, where there might be a joint board between the Board of Nursing and the Board of Medicine, or there has to be collaboration regarding prescriptive authority. So there's a lot of ways that yellow and red states are restricted in their practice, where the green states have much more availability to provide care.
Very nice.
Okay,
And
I'm
this has
surprised
been
to,
growing.
yeah, I'm
Okay.
surprised to see some states here in the red. I really am. I'm a little surprised
Like
about
California.
California.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm surprised about Michigan.
Yes. And there are, and so many of them are, they might have parts of full practice authority, but they're restricted in certain ways regarding either prescription protocols, collaborative agreement, or oversight by physicians. So
Right.
they're not, they may have components of it, but they're not full.
Right.
And when you think about this map, I mean, Texas and California cover a lot of real estate. So there's a lot of room for nurse practitioners to provide care, especially in those states.
Right. In the Midwest, I am not surprised that these are full practice states. As you know, I have been a coach for several of the professional nursing organizations and speaking to their members all the time. And I speak to nurses in that geographic area, and a significant portion of them are working for what we call critical access hospitals. And the definition of a critical access hospital is if that hospital wasn't there, then those folks in that particular catchment area would have to travel a minimum of 1 hour to get any kind of service. So I'm thrilled and not surprised to see that we're using the nurse practitioners to the fullest, where the access, the remoteness of these rural farm areas and small towns USA and things are such that you're providing a service that otherwise would leave a significant number of the population in the lurch.
Exactly.
Okay.
So, why does scope of practice vary by state? Well, licensure happens at the state level. So, we can't just get a license and go and practice in every single state. It doesn't work that way. So, each state has their own rules and regulations for what they will allow nurse practitioner practice to look like. And this is a hotbed. It's politically motivated and professionally. There's a lot of, back and forth in negotiations with what this looks like. But invariably, it is a permission to practice in the state. And it really doesn't have a whole lot of support as far as evidence that this actually makes care safer or does anything regarding public safety. And I think that's one of the things that the public needs to be aware of is, when we're licensed as independent practitioners, nurse practitioners. We have gone to school, we've done the competencies, we were certified. We talked about that in the previous episodes. Your licensure is regulated by the state, and conditions can be placed on that above and beyond. I know that there's been talk about the Nurse Practitioner Compact, and I'm delighted to hear that. I'm hearing talk that they're trying to look at that and revise it because what's out there now doesn't really meet the litmus test of, full practice authority. And I'm happy to hear that there's some discussions about that as well. And I think if they can make it more along the lines of a full practice model, it'll be adopted pretty easily across the board. But the evidence supports our outcomes are as comparable to physicians. The National Academies of Medicine just issued their new Future of Nursing report, and they're outlining the value that we're bringing, the increase of being able to provide more access if we eliminate some of these licensure barriers.
I think what's also important to stress here, again, because some nurses may not even realize, we have something called reciprocity. With an RN license. Okay. So reciprocity means that I can be licensed in New York and I can apply for a license in Massachusetts, which I have done. And they will look at my background. I'll send my resume, my credentials. They will call, they meaning Massachusetts State Board of Nursing, will talk to the New York State Board of Nursing. They'll realize I don't have any infractions, no lawsuits or whatever. And they will then grant me an RN license in the state of Massachusetts. The process takes a good 100 days easily. Okay. However, that process is very different for a nurse practitioner because of your ability to prescribe medication. So now we have to go through a very, very different credentialing process. On average, how long does it take to credential a nurse practitioner?
To credential with the insurance plans, Medicare and
Yes.
Medicaid is very easy. It can take, maybe a month at the most, but the private insurers can be anywhere up to 6 months.
6 months, right. So now let's talk about your mobility then. So you are in Connecticut. All right. Let's just say you have grandchildren now and everybody's living in Pennsylvania, and you now wanted to move to Pennsylvania. Walk us through what you'd have to do and how long before you could actually practice.
Actually, can I flip the script a little bit
Sure.
and let's talk about a full practice state like Washington State coming to Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Okay. So
Fine.
Washington State has had full practice authority for almost since its inception of the rule. If a nurse practitioner goes to Pennsylvania, now they're under a collaborative agreement and there is no reciprocity there. So there's no clock that says if you put in so many hours that you're going to be grandfathered in. The other thing is that you have to have a collaborative agreement for prescribing, and you have to have a collaborative agreement. You have to have two collaborative agreements, one for practice and one for prescribing. So, as a practice owner, that can be very costly. So, that can be another barrier for somebody to go from a full practice state to work in Pennsylvania. And I know that they're lobbying very hard right now to get the scope of practice barriers eliminated in Pennsylvania. And the nice thing about Pennsylvania is the governor, Josh Shapiro, is in favor of it. So hopefully the needle can be able to be moved, but it doesn't make any sense. Why is it okay for somebody in Washington State not to have any barriers? And then some places like Georgia, for example, or Texas that have so many barriers that it really precludes the workforce. Like, how are you going to build up your workforce? How are you going to get good educators to come in to train those future nurses if they have to be encumbered by these regulatory rules that have nothing to do with, patient care? So it gets a little squirrely.
It gets a little squirrely. And then again, that's 6 months. And what do you do in the interim? Just to pay the mortgage, let alone begin your practice. Just speak a little bit more about the compact, the concept of compact. What does that mean?
So right now, there are several states that are getting RN compacts. So we have nursing licenses, And the RN compact means that several states get together and they will agree to have one license in one state be applicable in the other states as well. So it's not across the country yet, but there's many, many states that have the RN compact. The APRN compact, on the other hand, there's only a handful of states that have approved it. And part of the reason is it doesn't address the prescriptive authority piece that the APRNs have. So that's problem number one. And then the second piece is they are putting in a transition to practice-ish clause in there that would add additional hours that you would have to do before you could get that compact licensure. And then the last thing was there really isn't a seat on the table for an APRN to be in the discussions, which I think is going back to them relooking at this whole APRN compact and how can we fix it so that it could be something of value. Because I agree, I think we should be licensed across all states and it shouldn't matter what state you're in. And telehealth, I think, shed a really big light on this whole concept because with telehealth, you could be anywhere and get care. So why should it be restricted by contiguous state borders, you know?
You bet. Okay, please continue.
So the collaborative agreement, just a word on that, it's safeguard or barrier. That's the question that comes up. But there is no evidence to support that it improves outcomes when you have this physician oversight or any oversight by a provider. And it does add to administrative and financial burdens because you have to have somebody fulfilling that requirement. So when you have a physician as your collaborator, there's malpractice that has to be covered. So if you're a nurse practitioner practice owner, and you have to hire a physician collaborator, chances are you're going to have to pay their malpractice. That gets very expensive. And then you
Very
have to
prohibitively, yeah.
pay. Yes, there are companies out there that will help nurse practitioners find collaborators. But again, it's an expense. Some do, by the luck of the draw, find somebody who's willing to collaborate for no charge. But they're few and far between. It's rare. But these are additional financial burdens. And again, now we're providing an opportunity where the access to some of these collaborating physicians is limited. In Connecticut, you have to have a like-minded collaborator. So in primary care, it has to be a primary care physician.
Yes.
Where are you going to find one?
Exactly.
Same with
Exactly.
psychiatrists, they're limited as well. So it really becomes an issue. And the Federal Trade Commission actually weighed in on some of the scope of practices, saying, you know, is this a restraint of trade by not allowing us to practice to the top of our license? So
There you go.
they're even weighing in on the economic value.
It's because they see it. Okay.
Correct.
Please continue.
So going back to the rural access areas, having full practice authority does really increase the opportunity for access to care because that's where nurse practitioners will go. We'll go out to the rural areas to provide care in places where there's healthcare deserts. And a lot of the restrictive states, especially in the South and Texas, for example, there's a lot of real estate in Texas. Not to have any restrictions on your practice would open up the opportunity for a lot more people in Texas to get access to care, especially in rural areas. But now some are going, if you're close enough to live to a border state, all the border states they can go to and get health care, but that doesn't help the folks in the middle part of Texas who might have to travel hours to get access to care. So it really becomes a barrier. And then provider shortage areas are identified in all different parts of every state. So there is a benefit when we do get autonomous practice that they're seeing increased access to care because NPs are going and gravitating to those areas to provide that care. And we do have hope with the Rural Health Transformation Grant as well. This is money that the federal government has put aside to help improve access to rural health in every single state. So every single state has these grants that are available.
So what happens when a physician's not in the area?
Then, well, a couple of things going back to the collaborative agreement. If a collaborative physician does not want to do that service anymore for that practice owner, for example, and she cannot replace or he cannot replace that physician right away, they are out of regulatory compliance in their state and their practice closes. And I think that's a huge thing for the public to understand that This impacts the APRN's ability as a practice owner, the nurse practitioner, to keep their doors open to provide you care. And it did happen to somebody in Texas who is providing mental health services. Mental health services. She had to actually go into another state to get licensed to be able to prescribe the medications because she couldn't have access to a physician in the state where she was in. She would have had to close her doors. But fortunately, she lived on a contiguous state border, and that was easily achievable. But if you're in the middle of Texas and you can't get a collaborating physician, then your business closes. And then you leave all those patients without the ability to get healthcare. But I can tell you, it's happening even in states that have full practice authority and have care in the cities too, because the number of providers are reduced. And I know I've had several people tell me that they've had to wait a year or two for just a routine physical exam appointment, or 6 months for a regular an appointment for a follow-up for a health condition. So it's really getting very difficult right now.
And I'm sure that speaks to a lot of people's personal experience. I know it bears restating that we don't necessarily have a decline in physicians. Okay, what we have is a decline in physicians that are specializing in primary care.
Right.
Okay, that, you know, you can still find a cardiologist, a neurologist, you can still find an orthopedist, you can still find an ophthalmologist, people who are specializing in a particular practice of medicine. But, you know, your family doctor, what we used to call back in the day, the internist, you know, Doc Joe on the corner kind of thing. You know, primary care physicians are very, very difficult to find now because they are not graduating in primary care. And if nothing more, the nurse practitioner has seen that gap and is very adequately and professionally, and thank God for them, filling this role that is a national need, a national need. Okay.
Absolutely.
All right. Please go to your next slide.
Compensation is also.
So here's the big question, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So a nurse practitioner has the opportunity to start a practice, and we are at a deficit the minute we open our doors. What do I mean by that? The lion's share of a lot of patients are Medicare, and Medicare only reimburses the nurse practitioner 85% of the physician rate. So we're starting at a 15% deficit for every Medicare patient that we see. This is traditional Medicare. So we're having to buy the same supplies. We're having to have an EHR. We're having to have all the same things that a physician practice has to have. But we're also going to be reimbursed and compensated less for the services that we're paid for. Unfortunately, this is something that will not change until Congress changes it, because this was a rule that went into place when President Clinton signed the Balanced Budget Act of 1998, which gave us the ability to be reimbursed for our services. So this is one huge problem. Sometimes there is an opportunity through Medicare for their Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation, opportunities to participate in programs that will pay NPs at the 100% rate. So these would be REACH ACO, these would be LEAP programs, which are coming to play. These are some of the accountable care opportunities. But again, a lot of NPs don't know that these are programs that are available because they're small business owners and they don't have access sometimes to this information. So
I'm going to have to stop you right there. Frank, did you want to take us into the first break?
Yes. Basically, we are going to go into our one and only commercial break on this special episode 172 right here on talkradio.nyc. I guess based on the way that this particular webinar has been created, we will be logging off. I've given you both the instructions to get back in, and I guess we'll be back in a few. See you soon.
Okay.
On Frank About Health, we're not just talking healthcare. We're managing disruption and innovation. Over the last 4 years, I've taken you from epilepsy and COVID to mental health, caregiving, and now the front lines of healthcare transformation. Stay tuned for a healthier future as we bring on the innovators, professionals, storytellers, and advocates
will show you how to own your healthcare every Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Okay, well, welcome back, everybody. I'm sure Frank will be with us in just a moment. Lynn, this is a fascinating presentation, and I want to thank you for the time and the attention to detail that you took in presenting it. Would you like to share your screen and pick up where you left off?
Oh my goodness, it went all the way. There we go.
There we go. Okay, so we were talking about the disparity in pay, that right from the get-go, since the Clinton era, you're starting at a 15% less reimbursement than physicians. Okay,
correct.
And you know, I don't know if you're making that up in volume, as they say, or how that actually works. But what's on the horizon for reimbursement for nurse practitioners?
Well, a couple of things I wanted to mention as far as the reimbursement process as it is right now. The other thing that we need to make aware of is that incident two billing makes the nurse practitioner invisible. And that is when the care that is done or rendered by the nurse practitioner is billed under the physician as the billing provider. So the rendering provider is delivering the service, the NP, it's under the physician's NPI, the billing provider. When it goes to the insurance company, it's reimbursed at 100% reimbursement. So when Medicare gets those bills, they're going to see that it's a physician name and not the nurse practitioner. So when we're talking about looking at quality measures, for example, or who's providing the actual service, like I said before in that infographic, it said 1 billion annual visits. This is why I think it's higher than that, because when the care goes in under the physician's NPI number, that NP's work is invisible. So that's a huge problem.
Does that have compliance overtones to it?
Well, it's interesting because there's specific criteria that must be met in order to provide incident to care. And that includes the physician seeing the initial Medicare patient. So they will do the initial treatment plan and development. There has to be ongoing interaction with a physician so that the nurse practitioner might see that patient and follow up, but that physician still has to have more interaction with that, provide that care. The patient can also not have a new problem because that requires a change in the treatment plan. And when there's a change, only the physician can do that. So during all of this, the physician must be present in the office or be able to be contacted to go over the care in case something happens. That's direct supervision, which no nurse practitioner is under direct supervision. So this is a billing opportunity that really needs to go away. And as part of the Future of Nursing Report and as part of MedPAC, they're advocating that this does go away because it's actually increasing costs of care. It's not making cost-effective care.
Understood. Okay. Next slide.
So we were talking about also some of the opportunities. Some of the private insurers actually are looking at NP practices and what they're able to accomplish with their outcomes. And they are actually negotiating with some of these nurse practitioner practice owners to relook at how much they're reimbursing for the care. Because if we can show we keep people out of urgent care, hospitalizations, and ER visits, then that's going to save the insurance company overall costs of care. So there's opportunities if nurse practitioners are savvy business owners and can show the data to support this, that there is opportunity for them to do more. The other thing to keep in mind, too, is that Medicare, because of this 15% deficit, practice owners often will add on additional service lines. For example, doing the disability ratings for the veterans so that they can get access to their disability pay. They may do aesthetics, such as Botox. They might do school physicals. So there's a lot of other opportunities in order to add on different types of service lines that pay better, that can allow the nurse practitioner to still have a sustainable practice and be able to take care of the Medicare and Medicaid population.
Okay. Continue.
One of the things that we're trying to do is connect all NP practice owners together in some fashion. Right now, there isn't a database that shows where all of our NP practice owners are located. We know they're doing great work, but they need to be visible. We need to come out of the shadows and be in the spotlight now because patients are looking for us. And we created the NP directory, Destination NP, so that patients can search for a nurse practitioner. They can go in, put in their zip code, or put in a disease state, and it can show what NPs are in that area that could be potential providers of care for that patient and their family. It also provides an opportunity for our students who want to be precepted and learn from nurse practitioner practice owners to select an NP practice to go and precept so that they can get that education. And it actually can provide a pipeline to employees for that practice. Should there be a good connection between the nurse practitioner and the student, they may want to start to employ them in their business, which will allow their business to grow because then they have another provider that can help see more patients. And the other big plus is that we're connecting nurse practitioners with each other, because one of the things we know is if there's nurse practitioners in the same community, they could start to share resources like office space. They could start to refer to each other, so they're keeping their businesses sustainable. They can actually find another NP that might be handling a specific disease state and becomes an expert in that, and they want to maybe collaborate with them regarding a particular patient. So it really allows the growth of NP practice owners from across the country to be able to coalesce. And who knows where else this can lead. Some of the things that we're being able to do with our NP practices is looking at support resources that a company may have that can help, say, improve appointments in the practice, and they might want to work with nurse practitioners. They can actually work with our NP directory and be able to find those NPs to help them. We have a medical device company that wants to work with nurse practitioners specifically. So this can also provide them with an opportunity to work with just nurse practitioners. So to have an impact on some of the cutting edge technology changes, for example, in devices, to be part of that as nurse practitioners, that's an exciting time for us as NPs.
That's a very exciting time, especially if you're going to collaborate with nurse scientists along the way. You know, we now finally have a school up in Massachusetts that has a graduate into doctorate program for nurse engineers. I want to tell you, it's the University of Massachusetts at Amherst.
Yes. Yeah, right in my backyard.
That's right in your backyard. What I love about this is the visual, and keeping in mind how you opened your presentation with saying that, you know, almost 500,000 nurse practitioners are actively practicing in the country right now. That's quite a lobbying number, and it's just growing steadily.
Yes. Right? And these pictures are actually NPs that are on the platform, showing them how they can be connected. And I do think that there is a lot more interest in companies and entities and organizations that want to help NPs with their businesses. So we're getting a lot more from industry of folks that are wanting to engage in conversations to help nurse practitioners start up their practices, help them with bits and pieces of putting their practices together. One of the big things that we don't have is education around business. And that's a huge problem, because if you're starting a practice, you really need to have the understanding and the underpinnings of the foundational support of how to operate a business. And we don't get that in education and training.
No,
so we teach that. Yeah, the National Nurse Practitioner Entrepreneur Network has a 12-week Business Basics Accelerator course that gives you the foundational support taught by content experts. And it's geared for a busy NP so they can do the clinical work, the competency work during the week. And then we get onto a Zoom call at during the week where we all can get together and support each other and lift each other up and really start to work and make those community connections of NP practice owners, which has been fabulous.
You bet. That's terrific. Continue, please.
So I just wanted to give you also some of our references that I had regarding this, but I'll actually, if you have any other questions, because that was, I think, my last slide. Yes.
Okay.
Very nice.
Just going back to the Future of Nursing report, I think it's a really strong read for any NP to take the opportunity to look at that. The Future of Nursing report, it's done every 10 years, and they actually look at what's going on in the healthcare climate and make recommendations. And these are people from all aspects of healthcare and medicine and science that get together and create this document. So it's kind of interesting to see their spin on it. But the highlighted points that they really want to focus on specifically for nursing is eliminating restrictions on the scope of practice of advanced practice registered nurses and registered nurses so they can practice to the full extent of their education and training will increase the type and amount of high quality healthcare services that can be provided to those with complex health and social needs and improve both access to care and health equity. And that comes right from the report.
I'd like to just go back a moment to the pay parity, because it's a burning issue for women across the country, regardless of their professions, that we are paid differently for the same work. Mm-hmm. Is there any, in those references that you just showed us, is there any research out there or white papers or position papers out there to kind of say that if nurse practitioners were to achieve parity with physicians, how would that impact the healthcare system? Would it cost more? Is there a cost savings involved there? Do we have anything any data to substantiate our argument?
There was a study done by Texas, and they looked at healthcare in general, and they looked at the impact of providing full practice authority for their nurse practitioners. What would that look like? And they did look at the economics of it. And what they said is if they gave nurse practitioners full practice authority, it would pump billions of money back into the system because they're creating small businesses. Again, going back to the economics of the community.
Right.
And they're employing people. They're keeping people healthy. That gives you a healthier workforce. We're bringing more trained educators to come in to educate. So there's a domino effect of this being allowed to occur. The other thing that I have to say, back in President Trump's first administration, he actually signed an executive order in October, I think it was 2020, which said we should be reimbursing for the service provided, not the provider of the service. Think
now,
about
there's
that.
There's a concept.
Yes. But when you think about it, how is that going to impact the current reimbursement system that we have? I mean, it's run by the American Medical Association for the most part because they own the CPT world.
Right.
So, and it's hard to put a number on value because it's a longitudinal process. It's not a transaction. So,
right.
But nurse practitioners are starting to step up. And I actually had a conversation yesterday with an NP colleague of mine who for his dissertation is looking at value-based care and how nurse practitioners can be an integral part of that system because of the nursing model and the type of care delivery that we provide for our patients and the economic value that that brings. So there's a lot of light being shed on what we're capable of doing for our communities and overall health, but I just think people just need to, let us do our thing.
You've certainly earned it. And I'm just so grateful, Frank. I'm going to be eternally grateful for giving Lynn and myself the opportunity to
Absolutely.
Showcase this and to really, you know, follow the mission and the purpose of your program, with which is really raising awareness and advocacy.
Yes.
You know, again, the nurse practitioner role has been around 25 plus years. And you bore witness to it yourself. You yourself in 2026 were not fully understanding what was the difference between an RN and a nurse and a visiting nurse and an NP.
Correct.
So we are so very, very grateful for this. Frank, I know you want to take a few minutes to say a few things. I'd just like to ask Lynn one more question. Okay.
Sure.
Let's just talk about the 7 to 8% of us that are now prepared at the doctorate level. And there are various doctorate pieces that are out there. And, you know, we're going to have to get used to collaborating with very different people. As you suggested, durable medical equipment companies are really interested in the nurse practitioners and the nurse researchers. As I shared, I only recently, within the last 18 months, 2 years, found out that we have a graduate program in nurse engineering. Wow. You know, my doctorate is in healthcare administration and business, so it's not in nursing whatsoever. But can you just very briefly, Lynn, talk about the DNP program and versus the RN program? And I know that, the PhD program that really underscores some of the nurse researchers. The PhD program underscores the credentialing of the under nurse researchers, where the DNP program, which is a doctorate in nurse practice, is really how do you then take that concept, that research, and you operationalize it. So do you have a few words that you want to close with?
Sure. As far as advanced nursing degrees, there's quite a few of them. So most people think of the DNP and the PhD, but there's also an EDD, a doctorate in education. There's a doctor of science. So there's lots of opportunities for NPs to get advanced degrees in nursing. They all have different tracks and different endpoints that you want to go to. And I think if you're a nurse practitioner thinking about which track do I pick, I think you have to think about what you can contribute or what are your interests that will drive your passion to contribute to the body of nursing. So I chose the DNP in nursing leadership because that's where my heart is.
Right.
But there are folks who love research and want to expand on that. So the PhD is perfect for that.
Yes.
The nurse scientist might want to work on some technology or some other aspect of the nursing model and how that relates, then the EDD for those who want to teach. So there's a lot of different ways that you can get an advanced degree in nursing. I think it's just figuring out where you need to hang your hat.
So I'm going to hand the show. We have co-opted Frank's program now for 3 sessions,
yeah.
And we've done a really good
job.
I would not have wanted to partner with anyone else on this. But just to recap, you know, we have gone from a 3-year hospital training program where we were essentially in indentured servants to about 7 to 8% of us prepared at some sort of doctorate level. And we've done it in 60 odd years. So, you know, to coin a phrase from the 70s, we've come a long way, baby.
Yes.
And I'm proud to be a nurse, as I know you are, Lynn. And again, Frank, thank you so much for giving us this forum. So let me just turn your show back over to you.
Well, you know, from the start, when we started talking, especially Lynn, when we were introduced by Sam, I had known that this particular discussion required more than one episode. I had known that it's not just the healthcare story of the nurse practitioner, but it unfortunately has become the social story as well. And of course, consequently, an economic story. And so I'm glad we were able to break that out. And with Phyllis's professional experience in the entire scope of nursing, and especially as an executive coach, I knew this webinar style type of approach was perfect. It was literally like being in school, you know, or in my case, observing a nursing class in session. But that being said, I do have my fundamental questions, I guess, as a healthcare advocate. I started the show by saying that we've seen plenty of disruption across the board, not just the patients, but the doctors, the hospital systems. And now we've been talking over the last 2 weeks about the nursing practitioner profession being sliced in different ways and now being focused mainly on the state level. And as Phyllis said, this is a 60-year journey that seems to be contracting. And yet, while you did a wonderful presentation right now and showing how, like, those green states in particular are still fighting for the original vision of the nurse practitioner. What I want to know is, from what you've observed, what you've researched, and even the responses that you've heard from the call to action, does it look like that no matter what kind of fighting and advocacy will continue, that it will remain restricted because of the current climate that we're in? I'm not even sure how some of the way we recovered from COVID will come back at the rate that it did, or maybe even when there eventually becomes a new administration, there may be so much in fray that it may be hard to get back as quickly as we did during a pandemic the kind of traction that the nursing practitioner field had been developing. So I guess that's a long-winded question, but I wanted to know what your foresight is into the profession's integrity and preservation, because I'm still wondering if there's going to be other things trying to drag the profession down.
I think the consumer is going to demand that the nurse practitioners practice to the top of their education and training, because we are the ones that will be providing the primary care for the majority of folks in the future. And we also are going to places where physicians typically do not want to go or can't go because, for whatever reason, the underinsured, uninsured, rural areas. So the need is going to be there. And one thing you forget is nurses are problem solvers. So we're going to do workarounds no matter what happens. So do not count us down, because we are going to figure out a way to make it work.
That was supposed to be a secret.
Yes. You have to be frank about it on this show.
Well, you know, we have learned over the years, apologize as opposed to ask permission.
Exactly.
You know, we have learned that well.
Yes. I mean, we have a lot of fights, you know, a lot of battles across, you know, all the different levels of care and whatnot. But, you know, one of the things I have to say is that nurses are resilient. We persevere. And we will be there for our patients, because that's who we serve.
That's it.
We serve our patients.
Day, that's it.
And that is the consumer you're referring to. So the patient, like I say every week on Frank About Health, you need to own your healthcare and continue to fight if your current system of government is not backing you as you had expected. So I think that the last two episodes in particular, because of the way that we were focusing on the call to action and the subsequent webinar, were definitely the education that my viewers and listeners need going forward, because this is something that is going to be continuing on even after this show airs. So I'm really glad to hear that you are also what I would qualify as a disruptor, even though you were not in the original cycle of shows that I generated. That kind of segues into how I want to wrap up this episode of Frank About Health. I said in the beginning of the show to all my listeners out there and viewers that have watched me for almost 5 years at currently 172 episodes, that Frank About Health started as a mission to remove stigma. And thanks to eventually meeting Phyllis Quinlan and being able to pay tribute to caregivers, to be able to pay tribute to loyal friends like Rita Gray, as well as Betty White when she died, and not to mention the documentary out there that I know some of you were watching, it's on YouTube, Being Frank for a Healthy Future. It also was, if you remember, Phyllis, a little brainchild of ours when we were talking about post-COVID,
living a
healthier life. So yeah. I haven't forgotten the family structure that talkradio.nyc has brought to me to grow and expand from an epileptic individual that is now a fighter, an advocate, and a disruptor. And I'm here to announce that basically we're going to be taking a brief hiatus for a while, but we are coming back stronger, better than ever. I just want to give a little speech to everybody out there listening, especially my 25,000 plus listeners over the last 4 years. I just want to say that as we close today's conversation, yes, this is scripted, forgive me, I just want to say my point. I want to thank everyone who has been part of the Frank About Health journey right here on talkradio.nyc. These conversations have helped us to explore some of the most important issues shaping healthcare, from patient advocacy to caregiving, innovation, public health, the future of medicine, disruption, and not to mention today, the whole life and career of the nurse practitioner. and of course, nursing in general. So while tonight's episode reflects on the important work of nurse practitioners and the future of healthcare access, it also represents something bigger, the continuation and the expansion and mission of Frank About Health. So I just want to say, as episode 173 comes in April, that remember, on being frank about health with all of you, I am reminding all of you that your health matters, your voice matters, and the future of healthcare belongs to all of us. Not even your doctor has a say, but if it gels with what you know about yourself. So remember, treat your nurses and your doctors and your PCPs as your colleagues, because we're all in this together. But I just want to say that when we come back, there's going to be new modes of Frank About Health that you haven't yet seen. And I just want to thank you all for watching a little segue tonight, which was this webinar series. There will be more series type of episodes going forward. I know I am getting the 1 minute to ending, but I'm glad I said everything I had to. That would be my disclaimer for the future. thank you again, Phyllis. Thank you, Lynn, for being here.
Thank you so much, Sam,
for introducing me to both these women. And thank you, Jesse, for doing the special version of Frank About Health for tonight. And I just want to thank everyone out there that has been watching me on Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn, Twitch, and of course, talkradio.nyc. We will see you next time. Good night.
Good night. Thank you, Lynn.
Thanks. Yeah.
Are you a spiritual seeker? Are you interested in expanded states of reality? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant. And on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will dive into these topics with authors, teachers, researchers, and guides. Tune in at our new time, Wednesdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Wednesdays, 12 noon Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
On Frank About Health, we're not just talking healthcare. We're managing disruption and innovation. Over the last 4 years, I've taken you from epilepsy and COVID to mental health, caregiving, and now the front lines of healthcare transformation. Stay tuned for a healthier future as we bring on the innovators, professionals, storytellers, and advocates who show you how to own your healthcare every Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.